Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Congress has now approved a compromise to reduce the deficit and avert a default that would have devastated our economy. It was a long and contentious debate, and I want to thank the American people for keeping up the pressure on their elected officials to put politics aside and work together for the good of the country. The economy's already had to absorb an earthquake in Japan, the economic headwinds coming from Europe, the Arab Spring and the rise in oil prices, all of which have been very challenging for the recovery. But these are things we couldn't control. Our economy didn't need Washington to come along with a manufactured crisis to make things worse.
Whoa, a manufactured crisis created by David Axelrod, who is running Obama's campaign. Welcome to the Savage Nation. There is a lot to talk about. I mean, it's kind of a dead duck by now. But the fact of the matter is, the markets responded accordingly. The Dow is down 265 points. Gold is up. They know that Obama's a Leninist. They know, let's say they know something's wrong. They know that he hates business. They know that he hates the middle class. They know that Axelrod, the lifetime left-wing radical street activist who was running Obama's campaign for 2012, is behind this battle. And they also know that Obama lied through his teeth because he is now going after raising taxes along with Harry Reid of Nevada, which is shocking. I personally cannot watch Obama anymore. I get sick when I see him. I used to watch him. I can't even look at him. When he comes on, I get angry. I get sick. I turn the TV off. Watching Harry Reid yesterday, I got so angry I turned the TV off. I don't go for that soft shoe act of Harry Reid's. The fact of the matter is I was not fooled from the beginning. And my article, Savage Says America Has Been Hoodwinked, was basically the centerpiece of yesterday's program. It was picked up by WorldNet Daily. It's now on the Drudge Report. America Has Been Hoodwinked, says Savage. And I want to say to you, it's a very important article, and you should read it. I want to first read to you a letter I got from a prominent businessman, an email. And here's what he said. Michael, last night was awesome as usual. You are so right. I paid almost $3 million in taxes last year. $3 million. He said, I employ 125 people directly and hundreds indirectly who all pay taxes. And now the leeches in D.C. want more from me? Michael, I'm with you. I will retire next year if they raise my taxes. He says, I started this firm with $50. I worked 18-hour days, 7 days a week for the first 3 years. I put in at least 10 hours a day, 6 days a week for the last 27 years. Why? So they can take from me to give some deadbeat a welfare check? Or medical care to a junkie, like you said, they waste the money. This is what pisses me off worse than anything. I give millions to charity and they spend a dollar. I don't get it. I missed that line. You and I are not alone, Michael. I have friends who own trucking, construction, marketing, food service businesses, and farms, just to name a few, who employ tens of thousands of people. They have had enough of being demonized by this ass in the White House. They contribute to GDP in a huge way. I will sell my company and shelter all of the proceeds if they don't stop. Just like in Atlas Shrugs, the producers are getting ready to go on strike and let the welfare leeches fend for themselves. See how well that works out. It's about time we hear a thank you from Obama, that we don't pay our fair share, or it is not fair. He is crazy and the money in America is getting stolen from us. Savage, you spoke for thousands, if not millions, of wealthy people who are not thieves, who pay more than their fair share, who give millions to charity. How much is enough? And that's an email that I think many of you are thinking is a correct email. And the fact of the matter is, we know what's coming next. Now that the Marx has got their way and beat Boehner into a paste, they're now going to go after raising taxes on the middle class. They're now going to do what they've always wanted to do, which is to destroy America's ability to defend itself. The fact of the matter is there were some bright notes in this picture and some dark notes. I want to go down the list. There's only a few of them of the Republican turncoats. Here are the Senator Quislings. I call them the McCain Nine. Of course we knew McCain would vote with the Democrats because he's always been a backstabbing SOB. We know who McCain is. But now we have another list to go with McCain. Brown of Massachusetts, I told you that 2 days after he was elected, what you could expect from him and what you couldn't expect from him. Collins of Maine, with that fake shaky voice of hers, she never had me fooled. Cornyn, Texas, Crapo, Idaho, Hutchinson, Texas, Kyle, Arizona, McCain, Arizona, McConnell, Kentucky, and of course Olympia Snow of Maine, another wobbly. So those are the six Republicans who joined the Democrats to shaft America forever. And of the no's, you should know that there were many Republicans who said no. Some of them you know, some of them you may not know. Here are the good guys. Ayotte, New Hampshire, Chambliss, Georgia, Coates, Indiana, Coburn, Oklahoma, DeMint, South Carolina, Gillibrand, Democrat, New York, even voted no. But you see, the Democrats who voted no were voting no because they wanted increased taxes. It wasn't enough for them. So let's stick to the good Republicans. Graham, South Carolina, said no. Harkin, Democrat, Idaho, said no, but that's he wanted more taxes. Republican Hatch said no. Heller, Republican Nevada, said no. Republican Oklahoma, Inhofe, said no. Let's see who other what other Republican senator said no. Republican Utah Lee said no. Republican Kansas Moran said no. Republican Kentucky Paul said no. Rubio, Republican Florida, said no. Sessions, Republican Alabama, said no. Shelby, Republican Alabama, said no. Toomey, Republican Pennsylvania, said no. Vitter, Republican Louisiana, said no. These are the good guys. There are many, many good men out there and good women out there, and they know what this is going to do to America. I have no questions for you. However, if you have comments today, if you'd like to talk about America being hoodwinked, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. In the interim, I will quote the article, Savage Says America Has Been Hoodwinked. Talk host warns of Leninist president's doomed path offers better idea. And here is what WND wrote. As the U.S. Congress came to an agreement on a budget that purportedly would avoid the nation's first ever default, talk radio host Michael Savage warned his audience not to listen to voices on the left declaring it a victory for the Tea Party. Quote, if the left is telling you it's a victory for the Tea Party, then you know it's a lie, he said to his Savage Nation listeners. Savage said today's politicians need to learn lessons from history to understand what Obama is doing, asserting that the term Leninist better describes the president and his policies than Marxist. Savage said Lenin thought that a nation could only grow more prosperous when a nation is controlled by a vanguard and elite, a people who know better than you what to do with your property. The Leninist elite would lead people to a world free of pain and poverty. There would be no more haves and have-nots or private property, just boundless prosperity. All a nation had to do was transfer its entire wealth to Lenin's vanguard, close quote. But the Leninist vision had consequences, Savage noted. Aside from the well-documented horrors of Soviet tyranny, America's rich will be poorer, America's poor will be poorer, America's middle class will be eliminated, Savage said. But America's government will be more powerful than ever, as will the elected officials and their corrupt bureaucrats. Now, since Obama can't take wealth from the rich at gunpoint, as Lenin did in Russia, Savage said, so he has to use taxation and regulation. Over the past three decades, this government has been taking wealth from the producers, the job creators, the savers, and the innovators, said Savage. He pointed out, well, I don't get to give you all the details, but we're paying more taxes than ever, while the lowest income classes are paying lower taxes than ever. Savage continues. You want to read it? Go to michaelsavage.com, go to Drudge, go to WND. The productive class is already picking up a disproportionate share of our government's tab, and still things seem to be getting worse, Savage said. We have a government running record deficits. We have millions upon millions who are underemployed or worse, unemployed. We have a socialized medical plan called Medicare Part A that will go bust in 2017. The United States has at least $50 trillion in unfunded obligations, all on account of policymakers like Obama, who think that the redistribution of wealth makes a nation richer, not poorer. You had too much yet? Well, here's the conclusion. Savage offered a better idea. If you think I'm just complaining, you're mistaken. Okay? I'm a brilliant logician, and I have an answer for you. Savage offered a better idea. Quote, let's not raise taxes for the producers, Let's cut their taxes, he said. Let's let the producers keep their money and invest it in their ideas. If the idea works, they will create jobs and empower individuals. If the idea fails, then it is back to the drawing board without a government check. The advantage of this approach, said Savage, is that it rewards the producers without empowering the bureaucrats. And as the producers grow wealthy, so does the nation. I'm Michael Savage. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The compromise we reached is imperfect. And we're going to send legislation to the president today that will not only avert a default, but make significant deficit reductions. Is that enough? I repeat, no, not enough. This legislation will provide our economy with stability it desperately needs. And to assure Congress that we will continue working, and I said this yesterday, I say it again.
The fact of the matter is this is the most corrupt Congress in American history. I don't know if we can survive it. They now want to take a highway bill and fund the highway bill. It's basically, there's a word for it. Let us put it to you this way. There was an old saying in the ancient days of Rome that all roads lead to Rome. Okay, does that make sense to you? In the ancient days, when the Roman Empire was at its peak, there was a saying, all roads lead to Rome. No matter where the road was built, it led to Rome. Now, with Harry Reid, you don't have to stretch your imagination to understand why I said all roads lead to Rome. The fact of the matter is this is nothing but vigorish that will be used to fund campaigns against the American people from now until kingdom come. Mike in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael. I'm reaching out. I want a shout-out from the Brooklyn Bridge here, and I'm really angry that this is all cover votes. I mean, all of a sudden, guys like Lindsey Graham are no votes and whatnot, and Orrin Hatch and the guys that have been there for 25 years while these Congresses have been hoodwinking us. And, you know, I just was really disappointed that after all was said and done, we had this huge problem.
Well, you're picking on the wrong guys, because even though you may not like them, Graham voted against this bill. Hatch voted against the bill, along with the rock-solid Republican conservatives like DeMint, Inhofe, and Paul and Shelby. I mean, they went along with them. They didn't go along with the McCain 9 Quislings.
Fair enough. But my point is we have to watch. I sometimes think when it's a foregone conclusion, then people start filling in the voids with these throwaway votes. And I don't know if we can look at guys' votes. I want to see them before an issue's decided, how vocal they were.
I understand very well what you're saying. But, you know, you have to give credit where credit is due. They did the right thing. It doesn't matter why. It doesn't matter whether it was a political calculation. All of this was a political calculation for all sides. And, of course, the battle lines have been drawn for 2012. Axelrod has even boasted that the battle lines have been drawn. Axelrod's the secret Marxist behind the Leninist in power. Axelrod, a lifetime left-wing radical from Chicago streets, a lifetime man who spent his lifetime trying to reappropriate money from people who earn it and give it to people who never earned it. Axelrod is running Obama's campaign right now. Remember, he resigned from the White House a few months ago to run the campaign. This debate was all about him setting down the guidelines for that campaign. And he says this is a debate that he wants Obama to have, and Obama's going to win it. Obama says we must tax the rich, and that's the campaign theme upon which Obama's going to run. Now, what the Republicans don't know how to do is defend themselves against that claim, because you can't just say, no, don't tax the rich. What you have to do is redefine the argument. But again, the Republicans are not going to listen to Michael Savage because they're in politics and I'm in talk radio. But then again, if I were a little less intelligent, I'd be in politics, not in radio. The fact of the matter is, if Obama gets up there and says, yes, we want to do this more fairly, it's only fair, we've got to tax the richest Americans a little bit more, they've got a little bit more they have to give, and the richest corporations have to give a little bit more. The answer is, then why aren't you taxing General Electric? Then why do you let your friend Jeff Immelt and GE get away with paying no taxes? Who do you think you're fooling, Mr. Obama? That's the proper response. And find the other corporations that are getting away with bloody murder. I mean, you can't just sit there and talk in circles. Give definitive answers to Obama. I told McCain what to do last time. Did he listen to me? He didn't have to listen to me. He's happy. He's got a big, comfortable pair of shoes that the government provides him and a uniform. He's got the uniform of a senator. What more does he need? He's never left his uniform. 1-800-449-8255. Salt Lake City, Jackie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I cannot stand to watch Obama on television anymore. I'm a foreigner, but I'm married to an American family. Let me tell you, although I've been here forever, and I think I've Americanized myself, where you were raised and the culture you were raised surfaces all the time. And this is why Obama is perceived by so many Americans like he's not an American. He just doesn't feel like one. He doesn't feel it. That's because the Kenya or the other environments where he was raised, they're surfacing all the time. He's doing so
well,
much.
He wasn't raised in Kenya. He was raised in Honolulu and Indonesia primarily. But that, I think that that's irrelevant. It's his. There are many people from Nigeria who are better Americans than Obama is. I've met Nigerians just off the boat who are more capitalistic than he is. So it's not about where his father came from. It's about where his head was at all these years. He sat in a church that espoused hate America for 20 years and then said he didn't listen to any of it. He grew up in a household that hated America and talked about the rich in derogatory terms. So the fact of the matter is he's a lifetime left-wing radical who's become an overt Leninist, and he's getting away with it because the media doesn't call him on it. That's the fact of the matter. But that's not why I can't look at him. I can't look at him because he makes me ashamed to watch him. And the reason I can't watch him anymore is when I watch him and I get angry. I get angry at him because he's lying. He knows we know he's lying. And yet he knows that the intelligent people who know he's lying are not numerous enough to counter the welfare cheats, the government bureaucrats, and the other grifters who are sure to put him over the top. Now, I'm going to say something that's going to scare you, but you may as well write it down. Others have hinted at it over the years. I'm going to tell you right now what their strategy is. Would you like to hear it? I'm going to tell you exactly how Obama's going to win in 2012. Or shall I not tell it to you? Would you like to not hear it? Because if you want to hear it, I'll tell you just what Axelrod and those other left-wing guys are thinking about in order to make sure Obama wins without any opposition whatsoever. Would you like to hear it? Well, you're going to hear it when I come back here on the Savage Nation. I'm going to give you their secret strategy in my mind. Why? Because if I were working for him, here's what I would do.
Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. You know, I'm having second thoughts about telling you what they're going to do because it's possible that they haven't yet figured it out 100%, nor do they think they can get away with what I think they're going to do. However, I don't know if I'm going to tell it to you. I may save it for my book for next spring. I mean, I really mean it. I'm not doing this to play with you. Why should I tell them what I think they're going to do and give them some ideas if they don't have them? Mark in Tennessee, do you think I'm right in holding it back?
Yeah, Dr. Savage, don't do it. You know, it's that very same reason. You know, it looks to me like he's going to be reelected. People don't believe it.
Yes. Yes, he is the most popular president in American history amongst the taxpaying American people. He is the most popular president in American history amongst those who pay no taxes or very low taxes or those who work for the government. The fact of the matter is there are more of them than the producers. And therefore, it's pretty clear to me what they're going to do to make sure that they swing the vote in their favor. And I don't think you have to be Albert Einstein to figure it out. But I'm not going to lay it out on this show. I'm going to save it for next spring when Trickle-Down Tyranny comes out. You know, I wrote Trickle-Up Poverty last year. It did very well. So next, the sequel from Harper in next spring after the novel is going to be Trickle-Down Tyranny, which is all about what Obama's been doing to you. Am I wrong? This is not Trickle-Down Tyranny? The reason I'm giving you the title, it's already been published in the catalog, so it's not a secret. But why should I tell you what's in the book now? It's too far ahead of you, you know, and many of you are traumatized with your own lives, and you're afraid of what's coming tomorrow with this gang in terms of taxes. Now, when you hear them say they're going to tax the rich, let me describe what they mean by that. The rich are you. The rich are two teachers in any municipality in America who have been teaching more than 10 years, each of whom makes over $100,000 a year with benefits, which is most teachers who teach more than 10 years are making over 100 grand a year. You are now the rich. You're going to pay more, as sure as I'm sitting here. But you don't believe it now. You think the rich mean General Electric. You think the rich mean corporations like GE, which have evaded taxes by rewriting tax laws. But you're wrong. That would be logical. I'd be for increased taxes on those who pay no taxes. I pay more taxes than I'm willing to pay, but I pay them because I'm afraid of the government. I pay retail. I have almost no deductions, by the way, outside of the standard deductions. I'm afraid of them. I'm terrified of this gang. The tax collector scares me to death. I pay through the nose. About 50% of every dollar I earn goes to the gangsters either in the state of California so they can feed the fat machine here, the illegal aliens in the hospitals, the degenerates and the junkies in the cities, or it goes to the federal government to feed people that I frankly don't believe need to be fed. They should feed themselves. But if they start taxing me more, I told you yesterday, if they do a gigantic tax increase on men like me, I will retire. I will not give them any more money than I have to. It's that simple. You know, many of you don't understand this. You listen to the show because you feel I know what I'm talking about, and you agree with me on some issues, but you say, you know what? He's in a different class than I am financially because he's a successful author and broadcaster, so naturally he's going to think like the rich do. You know, I was once poor, and the way I thought was the way most of you who are poor think, which is that anyone who has money stole it from somebody. Many of you have the mistaken notion that anybody who has more than you is a thief. And that's built upon human jealousy. And the human nature is such that you think anyone who did better than you is somehow crooked. You don't want to accept the fact that they either worked harder, they had a better idea, or they were damn lucky. But on the other hand, they don't owe it to you. Okay, so let's say that that's my perspective now, that I've worked for 60 years. I've worked since I'm 6 years old in one way or another. That's right. Either I sold used comic books, or I worked for my father, or I worked in a luncheonette, or I worked at an ice cream factory, or I was a lifeguard, or a busboy, or this, or that. I held three jobs to get myself through graduate school while I had two children. I didn't cry about it. The fact of the matter is, I just did it, because I was raised to work, and I was raised to compete. And I can't stop, frankly. I don't know how to stop. And I don't intend to stop. God will stop the clock, not me. God will make sure when the sand runs out of the hourglass, it's not up to me to decide when to lay on my behind. But that's my decision. Many of you don't work because you don't want to work. And frankly, I'm not so sure that work unto itself is that noble. I have nothing against inherited wealth. In fact, I think if you inherited your wealth and you want to spend it in your way, any way you want, on a golf course, flying around in your G550, or is it a G500? It's the Mercedes 550. I'm not quite sure which is the 550. It's almost a Gulfstream 650 now. They keep raising the stakes on everybody. It's your business. If you want to spend it on champagne and women, it's your business, because it really is a free country. So here's the thing. He says, okay, I've listened to this crap before. I've heard the rich say that if you let them keep more of their money, they'll spend the money and it'll trickle down. But many of you don't believe that. But let me explain how it actually works in the real world. For example, if I were able to keep more of the money that I rightfully earn instead of giving it to Harry Reid, what I would do with it, what I had intended to do with it, is I would set up a scholarship fund for college students. That's what I had intended to do. In fact, I still may do it, but I'm still enmeshed in a legal bent to spend more time and more money on a scholarship fund. I would also like to fund more animal preservation projects, because I think dogs are man's best friend and they're helpless. And, you know, I like dogs, so I would put money into that. So you say, well, what good does that do me? I'm living here in the Bronx, and I don't have what I want. I'm only driving an old broken Honda. Why can't I be driving a new Mercedes or a Lexus? Well, no one's going to give you that new car. You're going to have to earn it. On the other hand, when I give money, if I were to give money, for example, for a scholarship, so that would mean young people would have $15,000 more a year to go to college. So that would improve the economy, wouldn't it, in some way? And let's say I fund an animal, some kind of animal shelter. Doesn't that employ people? Doesn't money get spent in some way on the building of that animal shelter, the construction of the shelter, the maintenance of the shelter? We'd pay taxes on the shelter. This is what we mean by when the rich hold on to more of their money, they spend it. They don't just put it under their mattress. So let's take someone who's not as altruistic as I am, because I began as a social worker. And then I was a teacher in poverty districts in New York City. I've always been somewhat of a social worker and an idealist, and I still am in some ways. And some people accuse me of being too liberal because of that. I've had conservative friends saying to me that I'm too liberal because of my ideas, and I say to them, you don't know what you're talking about. But let's go to the next step. about those of you who don't believe that we should hold on to more of our money because we're simply going to put it into a bank and we're not going to spend it. It's never going to see the light of day. It's just simply not true. Nobody puts their money under a pillow. The fact of the matter is, if there was an opportunity to invest money with some assurance of a return on it, I would say the trillions of dollars would be released right now from T-bills. Do you know how much money is tied up from the rich in this country in no interest earning accounts in T-bills? Most of the rich people that I know about are afraid to spend money in this economy, so they put it into something as silly as T-bills, which earn like 0.08% or something like that. In other words, they don't earn any interest. They're kind of in a stagnant place. But if we had a business-friendly president instead of a Leninist president who stopped attacking business, who stopped attacking the working class of this country, and make no mistake about it, when he says the rich, he means the working class. Just make no mistake about it. What you also have to know is that the usual deadbeats are not going to have 1 cent cut out from the largesse that this communist regime is throwing their way. And by the way, if he's so interested in all of us doing our fair share, why doesn't the president start by cutting back on the First Lady's gargantuan personal staff, which the last I checked was close to 50 people? I heard that other presidents' wives had one or two assistants, whereas Queen Michelle has 40 assistants. And what about Queen Michelle's trips? Africa, Spain, Egypt, wherever they go, they travel like royalty. Wouldn't it make sense if she also cut back on some of her trips? And did as she said instead of doing as she said, meaning acted the way she talked about? I think so. Okay, what do you want to talk about? Let's take some calls. Wisconsin Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I want to disagree with you on this bill just because of this reason. Conservatives too often, if we don't get everything we want, would give up on the guys that are there, whereas the liberals have been working to get us to this point for 100 years. We got to take a longer-term aspect of this thing. Think of the Tea Party guys in Congress right now as Davy Crockett and the others in the Alamo. They're standing up. They're holding back as much as they can. We got to get them reinforcements in 2 years, and I'm afraid that if we go too negative on this bill, that people are going to run away from the Republicans, and we're going to have a repeat of 2006 and give the...
Well, I think that you're partially right, but you've got something in reverse. The Republicans ran away from their base. The Republicans ran away from their constituents. The Republicans ran away from the American people. That's really what happened. You've got to remember something. There has been an election since the communist was elected in 2008. Don't you remember 2010? The people said no. They said yet. They said no, they don't like the communist policies. They remembered what him and the fascist Pelosi did. They remember the fascist Pelosi running around with a big hammer, boasting about how she beat people up with the hammer, the things they did in the middle of the night, in the dark of the night, on Sunday night, on Christmas. They remember what this gang did to this country, and they said no to Pelosi. They threw her out, don't you remember? And here we are, a year later, and we've forgotten that there was an election in 2010? There was an election last year, don't you remember?
Absolutely, and just consider what would have happened with this debt ceiling without that election. We'd be even worse off going farther down.
That's right, but the election was about throwing out fake Republicans and overtly leftist Democrats. And now we have a significant change in regards to the Tea Party members who made a big, big change and a big difference in this regard. They wouldn't even be talking about reduction without the Tea Party. You know that, and I know that.
Absolutely, and that's why I say...
All right, so now we now have to double down and not let guys like Biden get away with calling Tea Parties terrorists. In fact, Biden should be forced to retire. They should force that man to resign for what he said about the American people. Because if anyone represents the working American person, it's the Tea Parties. Who do you think they are? They're mom-and-pop businesses just like you. The Tea Parties are us. So Biden says the Tea Party's a terrorist? He's declared war on the American middle class? Who does Biden think he is? And moreover, and here's the frightening part, who the hell does Biden represent if he thinks that the middle class mom and pop business is a terrorist? Think about that one. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We are talking about the Leninist in the White House. the agitator behind him, Axelrod, who has laid down the gauntlet with regard to 2012. We're talking about Harry Reid with his quiet little voice a day after this passes, saying there's going to be tax increases after they lied and said there wouldn't be. We have a government that's basically, it's government anarchy is how I would describe it. We have a government not of the people, by the people, and for the people, and we all know it. It really doesn't matter whether you're left, right, or center. We know that we have a government of the lobbyists, by the lobbyists, and for the lobbyists. And even if they don't personally enrich themselves, as some of them are clearly doing, doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that all you have to do is say, all right, let's look at the list of senators. Let's see what their net worth was before they became a senator. Let's look at their net worth now. Take a look at Dianne Feinstein. Nothing wrong with her. She's a fine, upstanding woman. But there was an article in the LA Times a few years ago about her husband's business dealings benefiting directly and indirectly from committees that she sat on. Here is a woman sitting as chairman of the, I believe, the Senate Armed Services Committee, if you can believe it. I sometimes cannot believe who is on our Armed Services Committee. I cannot believe it. By and large, they're anti-war, anti-military, anti-gun people of the highest order. They hate the military, and they're sitting on... I mean, it's like watching people take over a church who hate God and hate Jesus. This is what's going on. So you list the people in the Senate, in the Congress, and you look at their net worth and see who's went up. And then you start asking yourself, all right, how'd that happen? This is what you do. This is how you start. But it's not going to happen when you have a Congress that's basically answers to nobody. They're not afraid of you. What we have is a dictatorship with interspersed intervals of democracy. But it's a dictatorship. Make no mistake about it. These people function in a void. It's as though you don't exist. And every few years they come to you and they try to hoodwink you into believing that they're representing you. But now you have a list of the quislings in the Republican Party. And now you have a list of the Republicans who said no to the Obamaites. And they're good people. And you shouldn't, let's say put them down and say they're all the same. They're not all the same. You know what to expect from McCain. We knew that a long time ago. But now we know who the McCain nine are. Brown, Massachusetts, he's basically channeled Kennedy. Collins with the shaky fake voice. Corn in Texas, a shame on him because he was a good guy. Crapo, Idaho, but then again, if you have a name like that, I mean, what do you expect? It can really affect a man the rest of his life. Hutchinson, Republican, Texas, we know what to expect from her. Kyle, Arizona, McCain, Arizona, McConnell, Kentucky, and Snow, Maine. That's the McCain nine. But there were many Republicans who said no. Ayotte, Chambliss, Coates, Colburn, DeMint, Graham, Grassley, Hatch said no. Heller said no. Inhofe said no. Johnson said no. Lee said no. Moran said no. Paul said no. Rubio said no. Sessions said no. Shelby said no. Toomey said no. Vitter said no. These are the people you have to support. And I would recommend that this core group of senators, these 20 or some Republicans, are the only hope for the United States of America. That would be my opinion. But it's better than seeing there are none, isn't there? Florida, John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm just shocked no matter how we slice it. Every time Barack Obama comes away with the trophy and he rubs it in America's face like he did today in that press conference.
Well, he's an egomaniac, which is not limited to him as a politician, but he doesn't have the brains to control his egomania. Some of them can play humble. He has no ability to play humble. It's not in him. And the reason it's not in him is complex. You have to be a psychiatrist to understand it. A guy like Obama had the skids greased for him from the time he was a child. Everything was given to him on a silver platter. And he's never heard people say no to him until very recently, and he's been very frustrated by it. So when he wins something, he goes back to default setting, and his default setting is that of arrogance. That's all. So you don't like his style. But you got to understand there are tens of millions of people who love him. They love him because he speaks for them. You've got to understand that we have had a revolution in this country in 28. However it happened, I have my ideas, you may have your ideas, it happened. And whether by fluke or by design, we have our first communist president. Now, I know that many doctrinaire Republicans say he is not a Marxist, and that's because they're part of the machine. They can't even see it when it walks right in front of them. They don't understand that you don't have to wear a red beret, nor do you have to enact 100% of your Marxist policies on day one. He's a very intelligent man. I've told you he's probably one of the canniest politicians to ever inhabited the Oval Office. If you underestimate him, you're making a bigger error than you could imagine. He is probably the smartest politician in American history. Given that he's an overt Leninist and he's getting away with it, what does that tell you? He's stupid? He has the slickest machine in the history of this country. 98% of the press is in his pocket. That's because they agree with his Leninist policies, some knowingly and some unknowingly. And that's a product of the fact that they went to journalism schools where they don't even know the difference between Leninism and a true free market society. And if you asked them what it was, they couldn't tell you. And number two, they would probably denounce the free market society. But having said all of that, don't underestimate Barack Obama. That's all I want to tell you. Forget that you don't like his policies or his style. There are tens of millions who do. They are the welfare recipients. They are the illegal aliens. They are the government bureaucrats. They are the unionists. And they are the other select groups in this country who basically vote in blocks. Now, the question is, will any of them wake up to what he is doing to the middle class? Because many of them are, in fact, members of the middle class. They are still buying the entire rhetoric. They're buying the rhetoric that he's attacking the rich. And most people think that the rich should pay more. What he's really doing is aiming his sights directly at the middle class, as I have tried to explain, both in trickle-up poverty and on this show on a daily basis. In the Marxist society that Obama and his minions want to create, the middle class shrinks, and the upper bureaucratic class gets more powerful and rich.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Congress has now approved a compromise to reduce the deficit and avert a default that would have devastated our economy.
Liar.
It was a long and contentious debate, and I want to thank the American people for keeping up the pressure on their elected officials.
Liar.
To put politics aside and work together.
Liar.
For the good of the country.
Liar. The fact of the matter is, I hate to give out statistics on this show because I know that as a listener, when I hear numbers, I generally, you know, go to sleep. But I have to give them to you. It'll be short, folks, but it's like taking castor oil when you can't go to the bathroom. Obama has acted like a tyrant of old. He refused to rein in spending. He grew the national debt. Listen to me carefully. In 2009, when he took office, the debt was $9 trillion. It's now more than $14.5 trillion. And it took America from 1789 to 2008 to rack up $9 trillion in federal debt. Did you hear what I said? It took America to go from the year 1789 all the way up to 2008 to rack up $9 trillion in federal debt. But it took Obama only 3 years to increase that 200-year debt load by 50%. Obama has refused to reform runaway entitlements or cut payments that go to his supporters and donors. Now, economists measure a country's debt load in terms of GDP, gross domestic product. Don't go to sleep on me. Focus. GDP is a measure of the entire value of the U.S. economy. I'm almost finished. In Obama's first 3 years, the national debt climbed from slightly more than 40% of GDP to 98% of GDP in 3 years. And rather than cut spending, Obama spent the summer of 2011 fighting with Congress to increase federal debt by another $2.5 trillion. Obama knew that his debt increase would make the debt larger than 110% of the entire U.S. economy, but he didn't care. Meanwhile, interest payments on the debt have surged from 15% of the federal income in 08 to more than 40% of federal income in 2011. So almost half of every dollar the federal government takes in goes right back out to our creditors in China. I can read more, but I'm not going to. It'll all be in a book that I'm actually working on called Trickle-Down Tyranny, which will come out next spring from Harper. I'm getting ahead of myself. I've given you the facts. So if you think I just speak in generalities, you're mistaken. If you just think I'm talking out of the side of my mouth and I don't study these things, you're mistaken again. But the most important thing for you to remember is that we've had a revolution in this country. And did you ever see the movie Burn with Marlon Brando that was done back, I think, in the 60s or 70s? And it was about a slave rebellion in one of the Caribbean nations, one of the Caribbean islands. And Marlon Brando plays a, I believe he was an Englishman or a Frenchman, sent out to one of the Caribbean colonies to manage the plantation. But he winds up joining the slaves in their rebellion. And it ends with them burning down the sugar cane and burning down the plantation owner's house. It's a dire prediction, but it's not too far from what could happen in this country unless you come to understand what this man is, where his psyche is. You say it can't happen here, and I'm telling you it is happening here. He's burning down the house of the economy. He is burning down the house of the economy. That is how I see it. And I don't know how you can't understand this. I know that many of you are welfare recipients, or you receive government checks of one kind or another, and you think it's just great. But when I read those numbers to you, you should be very alarmed, because the day will come that you will no longer be able to tax the producers because they won't be here anymore. They will have stopped producing. They will have left the country. They will have sold their business and moved to Canada or maybe even to Brazil. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about. And I will tell you again that Obama has committed almost every one of the abuses listed in the Declaration of Independence. Notably, and most notably, the one I just read to you. He has trampled on the rights of our individualism. He has trampled on the rights of state governments. He has also, by refusing to rein in spending and by growing the national debt from $9 trillion in 2009 to more than $14.5 trillion in 2011, he has not only bankrupted America, I don't think we could ever climb out of this. One last statistic. It took America to go from 1789, as I said before, to the year 2008, took this country $9 trillion in federal debt. It took 1789 to 2008 to rack up $9 trillion in federal debt. But it took Obama only 3 years to increase that 200-year debt load by 50%. Now, what sense, which school of economics did you go to which says that if you're spending far more than you are taking in your own household, the answer is to spend more? What school of economy are you studying? What school of economics are you referring to? Which school of economics says you spend when you don't have the money to spend by borrowing more? I don't know it. I know this. I know this as a father who has worked hard, who has grown children. When we were younger, there were things I wanted to buy I couldn't afford to buy. I remember it to this day. Back in the early 80s, I had two young children. I was putting myself through school. Actually, I was out of school. I was struggling. But I wanted to buy a new Porsche. Oh, did I want a chocolate brown Porsche with a, in those days, there was a fashionable bib that was put on the front of them. And I saw myself in that car, but I couldn't afford it. Instead, I drove a broken old Volvo. I mean, remember it to this day. It was four on the floor. It was slow as could be, but it got me where I wanted to go. I liked the car because it was a very good car, but it's not the car I wanted. I wanted a better car, a faster car, a flashier car. I couldn't afford it. Now, if I went to a bank and I said, could you lend me some money so I can buy a chocolate brown Porsche? The banker would have said, well, what collateral do you have? What income do you have? And he would have turned me down on that loan. He wouldn't have said, sure, go buy three Porsches. I come from the Obama School of Economics. Let me give you a new split-level home in the fanciest neighborhood in the country. And I would have said, but I can't afford that. Don't worry about it. We'll pay for it. And if you can't make the payments, Harry Reid will make the payments for you. Do you get the picture? That's exactly what this drunken sailor called the President of the United States has done to us. I don't know how you don't understand this. Sometimes I can't understand how stupid the American people can be to not see that this man is laughing as he does this to you. He's laughing at you. He's mocking you. He understands that he should have been stopped by now. But since you haven't stopped him, he's going to dig his heels in and he's going to do a lot more damage. I can guarantee it. He has taken the national debt from $9 trillion to $14.5 trillion. Now, many of you brainwashed fools say, well, the Republicans did it. George Bush did it. Well, it is true. There was $9 trillion in national debt when Obama took office, but now it's almost $15 trillion. Does that make sense to you? How can you then say that Bush did it? Bush was a disaster as a president. I criticized Bush for years. I warned you about Bush being a liberal Republican. It was no secret to me what he was doing. But now we see what Obama has done. It took Obama only 3 years to increase that 200-year debt load by 50%. 50%. And I will tell you again, in Obama's first 3 years, the national debt climbed from slightly more than 40% of GDP to 98% of GDP. And what he just did during the summer of 2011, he fought the American people to increase the federal debt by another $2.5 trillion. And Obama, the trickster, knew that his debt increase would make the debt larger than 110% of the entire U.S. economy, but he did not care. Interest payments on the debt have surged from 15% of the federal income in 2008 to more than 40% of federal income in 2011. So almost half of every dollar the Fed's taken goes right back out to our creditors in China. Listen, my friends, I have a PhD from the University of California at Berkeley in epidemiology and human nutrition. I'm nobody's fool. And one thing I know is numbers. And if you think that I'm just full of hot air because I'm politically on the other side from the liberal, you're mistaken. I can see facts and I can see figures. And now a very important word from a very important sponsor on the Savage Nation. And it's about what happens to you as you age. Because as you age, you focus more on the legacy that you leave your children and grandchildren. And you want to share your wisdom and experience with your kids and grandkids because it's one of life's most important callings. But what happens if you suffer from hearing loss? This gift could be lost. Leaving that legacy of your brain requires effective two-way communication. But now there's a new medical breakthrough for those of you who have hearing loss called the Esteem Hearing Implant. This revolutionary solution is 100% invisible, so you can keep up your active lifestyle. The Esteem Hearing Implant delivers a natural improvement to your hearing with a natural clarity of sound. You can learn about this new breakthrough and give your children a legacy they will cherish for their lifetime. Call 1-800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. Envoymedical.com. Write it down. That's 800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. Do it today. Can you hear me? Call 1-800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. For a list of side effects and benefits associated with Esteem, visit envoymedical.com.
Savage.
To Lenin, Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, because Obama is truly a Leninist, not even a Marxist. Many of the fake Republicans are saying, well, he's no Marxist. No, they're right. He's a Leninist. You see, Lenin had a vision, a disturbed vision. Lenin thought that a nation could only grow more prosperous when controlled by a vanguard, an elite, a group of people who know better than you what to do with your property. The Leninist elite would lead people to a world free of pain and poverty. There would be no more haves and have-nots, no more private property, just boundless prosperity. All a nation had to do was transfer its entire wealth to Lenin's vanguard. The Leninist vision, of course, had consequences. If you did not want to relinquish your private property, Leninists would just take it. For in addition to being a socialist elite, Leninists were also an elite of thieving, murdering thugs. Furthermore, Leninism's centralized decision-making created horrific inequities. Famine, not abundance, was just one consequence of Leninism in the ex-Soviet Union. In the Leninist world, the rich grow poorer and the poor grow poorer. The government, which controls every piece of property, right down to the last peppercorn, grows immensely rich, as do the party apparatchiks who control all goods and services. At its very core, Leninism is not about empowering workers or about delivering abundance. Leninism is about redistributing a nation's wealth to a government elite. While Leninists say they detest private property, they use the state to hoard property for their own uses. As one Eastern European dissident observed, communism simply created the new class of powerful bureaucrats. But today's policymakers can learn very important lessons from Lenin. Leninist notions of property teach us the errors of redistributing wealth. Leninist organizational tactics teach us the terror that can result from empowering bureaucrats at the expense of the individual. And given the failed history of socialism, you have to ask yourself why Barack Obama appears intent on repeating the errors of Lenin and his followers. Make no mistake about it. The Obama administration wants to redistribute wealth. It wants to take the wealth of the nation's productive class and deliver it to the state. The administration will take this wealth through taxes. It will take this wealth through eminent domain. It will take this wealth through increased regulation. The end result? America's rich will be poorer. America's poor will be poorer. America's middle class will be wiped out. But America's government will be more powerful than ever, as will the elected officials and their select bureaucrats. You see, Obama's Leninism comes in many forms for those of you who are naive enough to believe that I don't know what I'm talking about. Obama himself is the individual expression of government elitism. He attended fancy schools. He befriended radical chic elitists like William Ayers. He believes that government, when staffed by fellow elitists, can do almost anything. It can run businesses, defeat market forces, and control the weather. It can even cure cancer. Obama sounds smart, so it must all be true, argue his followers. All Obama asks is that you let him and his bureaucrats control an increasing share of our nation's wealth and property. You know, the federal government has a stake in General Motors and Citigroup, or at least it did till recently. In light of record deficits and recent unemployment numbers, the nation does not seem to be any better off, even though the government took over General Motors and Citigroup. Still, Obama wants the state to control more of our property, more of our wealth. He asks us to give him increased control of our health care system so that we can make the country healthier. He asks us to give him more control of our nation's energy so that he can set the global thermostat. There are costs to Obamanomics, just as there were consequences to Leninism. Forget the fact that the federal government still has not figured out how to pay for the promises it has made over the past several decades. This is not about balancing budgets. It is about the Obamanistas aggregating wealth. The more they get, the more powerful they become. Just yesterday, Joe Biden called the Tea Party's terrorists. And this is where the rich come in. Obama needs their money to finance his acquisition of the private sector. He cannot take it at gunpoint as Lenin did in Russia. So he has to use taxation and regulation. Now, what I'm going to say to you in the next two sentences should be memorized and written down, boys and girls of the Savage Nation. Over the past three decades, this government has been taking wealth from the producers, the job creators, the savers, and the innovators. Pay attention to what I'm going to read to you. In 1987, the richest 1% paid roughly one quarter of all income taxes. The bottom 50% paid 6% of all taxes. That was in 87. Fast forward to 2007 when I last had the data. And the richest 1% were paying 40% of all income taxes, and the bottom 50% are paying just under 3%. So in other words, the bottom pay less, the middle pay more, the rich pay more. In other words, the productive class is already picking up a disproportionate share of our government's tab. And still, things seem to be getting worse. We have a government running record deficits. We have millions upon millions who are underemployed or worse, unemployed. We have a socialized medical plan called Medicare Part A that will go bust in 2017. The United States has at least $50 trillion in unfunded obligations, all on account of policymakers like Obama, who think that the redistribution of wealth makes a nation richer, not poorer. Ladies and gentlemen, the trouble with socialism, as one once observed, is that you eventually run out of other people's money. Here is a better idea from the Savage Nation. Let's not raise taxes for the producers. Let's cut their taxes. Let's let the producers keep their money and invest it in their ideas. If the idea works, they will create jobs and empower individuals. If the idea fails, then it is back to the drawing board without a government check. The advantage of this approach is that it rewards the producers without empowering the bureaucrats. And as the producers grow wealthy, so does the nation. I went on to a channel that shows emergency rooms. One of the emergency rooms was in Pittsburgh at the Allegheny Hospital, a fine hospital indeed, and the emergency room staffed with some of the best doctors. The saints of our time, by the way, seem to work in emergency rooms. They do things I cannot believe a human being is capable of. And in this emergency room, I see some of the emergencies. I see a heroin addict who's overdosed, who was wheeled in from his friend, his junkie friend's apartment. And I see brilliant doctors who trained for years and nurses who've trained for years and millions of dollars worth of high-tech equipment being used to save this OD junkie. My opinion? You know what my opinion is about junkies who come in with an overdose. How about a crack mother they wheeled in coming in to give birth to deliver a crack-addicted baby? You know my feeling about that, don't you?
Savage.
Now, we hear Harry Reid and Barack Obama tell us that the rich have to pay a little bit more, that everyone has to pay their fair share. Let me ask you something. Let's say you're a liberal who likes Obama and agrees that what he's doing is the right thing. See if you can answer this criticism. Obama has nearly doubled the number of limousines used by government officials. In the last year of the G.W. Bush administration, the federal government owned 238 limousines, according to the GSA, 238 limos. By 2010, 2 years into Obama's reign, the federal fleet had swelled to 412 limousines. Okay. These limos aren't cheap. The Government Accountability Office, GAO, said that the Obama administration spent $1.9 billion to buy and operate limousines in 2009 alone. Let me repeat that. The Obama administration spent $1.9 billion to buy and operate limousines in 2009 alone. So let's crunch the numbers together. With a fleet of 412 limos and a budget of $1.9 billion, this means that each vehicle cost the taxpayer just over $4.6 million. You heard me? Even including the cost of the driver, security detail, higher gas prices, comprehensive insurance, maintenance and parking fees, how can the federal government possibly spend $4.6 million per car? But they do. According to a March 2011 GAO report, who knows? Maybe they park it next to the $400 Hammer and the $2,000 toilet seat. Leslie Page of Citizens Against Government Waste, a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit, wasn't amused. He said, it's one more reason why there is so much cynicism in the public about what goes on in Washington. So even you liberals have to understand that the hypocrisy of the Obama administration is overwhelming. 412 limousines, Bush had 238, and each limousine cost the government $4.6 million to buy and to maintain. Now, if we had a legitimate debate going on in 2012, leading up to the next presidential election, Obama could easily be defeated. I don't care how much money he spends. If the Republicans were simply to dig their heels in on things like this, Obama is history. Obama is toast. He gets a staple gun and he's back on the streets of Chicago putting up posters for the local candidates and a local alderman somewhere on the south side of Chicago. All I have to say to him is, wait a minute, Mr. Obama, you say you want to tax the rich more, then why did you almost double the number of limousines from Bush until you? How can you justify it? You keep attacking the rich, but you're acting like the super rich. Moreover, Mr. Obama, how can you explain that each car costs $4.6 million a year to run? How is that possible? Explain it. Now, if they put him on the defensive like that, they would win. Do you actually think Mitt Romney is going to put him on the defensive? Do you actually think that Mitt Romney is able to put Obama on the defensive? I don't think so. I think it's hopeless, frankly. New York WOR Ralph, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
You asked the rhetorical question, how stupid we are as a people out here. Well, by and large, we're pretty stupid because this man, despite what he does, Michael, will win big in 2012. Mark my words, because the grand scheme, which you pointed out many a time, 8 years Dem, 8 years Republican, we're right on schedule for four more years of this guy. And that's the plain truth, Michael.
Well, that's a generic statement. Do you have any idea how he's going to pull it off? Because I do.
Well, I think what you just said about Romney, he's the most likely candidate, let's face it.
Yes.
And he just does not have the let's say, the courage or whatever it takes to confront him the way you just outlined, he'll play politics.
I would say that Romney is too polite. He's a check pants Republican, country club Republican. He doesn't have the fire in the belly. He's not a real fighter. He may be intelligent. He may be good. He's a fine man. He's a good family man. But that doesn't make for a good leader. And I don't think he has the guts, frankly, to stand up to Obama.
I couldn't agree more, but I'll tell you this. The Biden with his comments offended me to such an extent. You know, it's ironic. We can't call the terrorists, the actual terrorists, terrorists, but yet Biden comes out and calls these great American people who are doing the right thing. He dares to use that word terrorism.
Biden should be forced to step down. He should be thrown out of office for this. He's known as a loose cannon. He's known for shooting his mouth off. But this, I think, has gone so far over the edge. You know, you touched on a raw nerve for me. This government, this corrupt government, won't call the Islamo-fascist terrorists. They call them everything but terrorists. And yet they call the Tea Party people terrorists. So I ask you then, who is the real enemy of the middle class in this country?
Well, we hear them every day. I heard the main culprit the just this afternoon. But let me tell you, Michael, in my circle, I work in the arts here in the city in Manhattan. The allegiance to this man is unwavering. He can do no wrong. I don't care if he robbed a bank in broad daylight.
Right.
These people would turn their back and they
would give. Yes, I understand that's because he's a far left radical cool guy. And let's not forget there's a racial element in what you're talking about. Everyone wants to look the other way. But that's a huge element in his popularity amongst the elites. Am I right about that?
Well, you know you are. And, you know, they
well, because I know how they think. And I know the knee-jerk liberal. And I know exactly what they react to. They think that they're independent of mind. But, in fact, they're the most conformist amongst all of us. The liberal is a very conforming being. They are afraid to say the obvious. They are afraid to speak out against the pack mentality. And they generally are knee-jerk in almost all their responses.
They could never operate amongst their cronies if they were to tell the truth, you see, because it's a little club, you know. They have to go back and face their...
Do you actually think Steven Spielberg wants to pay higher taxes, for example? Let's go to the top of the heap. Do you think Katzenberg and Spielberg want to pay more taxes on the billions that they make?
No, but at their parties, at their elitist parties, they have to show their face so they can't come out and tell the truth. You understand that?
Wait. Spielberg was just seen in Sardinia aboard his 200 and some foot yacht. Let's start with that. The man earned it. He has a yacht over 240 feet, and on it he had some of his friends from Hollywood, including his adopted goddaughter Gwyneth Paltrow. So he's leading the high life, and he earned it. Okay. Brilliant director, very popular director. Do you think he wants to give up his yacht for Obama's dreams?
Of course not. But, you know, it's something it's so deep in the psyche, Michael. It's so deeply ingrained.
Do you think that cheapskate, stereotype, despicable disgrace of the Jews, Larry David, wants to pay an extra dime in taxes?
I think that to me, Larry David can make me laugh once in a while, I'll be honest with you. But I'll tell you, they're so politically stupid.
Larry David is the epitome of the self-hating Jew. Larry David is the Stepan. You remember the character I talked about, the black actor in the 1940s, Stepan Fetchit? Remember that reference?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, Stepan Fetchit made a mockery of the black male, and the white people loved him for it because he reinforced negative stereotypes. So Woody Allen does it. Larry David does it. They reinforce all the negative stereotypes of the Jew. And this is exactly what the Jewish people should avoid, but instead they go in flocks to laugh at themselves.
Well, it's a darn shame, Michael. And like I said before, you outlined it so perfectly. When you say about that it's all preordained, 8 years Dem, 8 years.
Yeah, well, all right, that is true, but I don't think I've described what the Dems are going to do in order to make sure that they win this time. Yes, the Republicans are putting up a straw dog again in Romney. There's no question about it. You remember the last election, what happened? Romney was leading the pack, and then through some kind of secret votes during the primary, that old warhorse McCain, the shame, suddenly beat Romney and Romney disappeared. Do you remember that little maneuver?
I sure do. Very fishy.
All right. Very fishy. Now, why did they pick McCain to run against Obama? They knew that McCain would lose. They knew that no matter what McCain did, even if he surged in the polls, eventually they could rely upon him to shoot himself in the foot, and he did that. He did just that. Remember, he did it over and over again? Remember in the last debate, people were begging him at town hall meetings, go tough on Obama, and he got up and he said, oh, he's no Marxist. He's a nice family man. He's a nice man. Do you remember McCain doing that?
I certainly do, and that there's, and you know, if he had just turned, you know, if we were ready to we needed someone like that, even though he was a little over the hill, Michael, you know, a little past his prime. But you know, I would have preferred him over what we have right now. But you know what?
Well, I voted for McCain because at least I knew where he was born. At that time, we knew he served the country, albeit I said last week it was he who set the rocket off on the forest door, which killed so many men and almost sank the ship. It was an accident. He hit the wrong lever, and he did serve 5 years in the Hanoi Hilton and suffered violently for it. And you have to have sympathy for the man. But nevertheless, we would have been better off, I think, even with a quisling Republican McCain rather than this fellow named Obama. But look, that's past history. What I'm saying is the past predicts the future. They're going to do it again. They're going to either run Romney, who will lose, or they'll run someone like Romney, who will lose. There's no question that a real revolutionary conservative cannot get to the winner's gate in the Republican Party. It's impossible.
It'll be some milquetoast candidate who will be up there just to get shot down again, and that's, and we're in for another 4 years. And
so, in other words, Bush had, did you hear my thing on limousines? Bush had 238 limos. Obama, the man of the poor who likes to cut the costs, raised it to 412 limousines. And each limousine cost the taxpayers $4.6 million in order to buy its security, gas, parking, insurance, etc. How can the government spend $4.6 million per limousine? That alone could sink his candidacy. I could beat him in a debate with that fact alone because I wouldn't let it go. You take two or three facts like this and you don't let him go like a pit bull. You keep repeating them in the debate. No matter what he says, no matter what the tricksters who are the so-called moderators throw at you, you go back to this last question. No matter what they say to you, you say, no, I'm not moving on. I want him to answer that question. And I don't care what you say. You're part of the government media complex. So ask it all you want because I'm not answering it. Make Obama answer how he spends $4.6 million on a limo. And let me tell you something else, Mr. The moderator, shut your trap, because I represent the American people and you're just a pimp. Now answer this. How come General Electric paid no taxes on $5.3 billion, Mr. Moderator? It would bring the House down. He'd win the election, right or wrong.
Well, they'll go so esoteric and so out of the, they'll so intellectualize it to such an extent. They can't simplify it like you just did. That's the problem. If a plain man with brains in his head would get up there and just say what's evident to all of us and just be forthright in the way he speaks, he could destroy him. But there's nobody.
The plain truth would win in any debate against this sophist. Make no mistake about it. Obama is the classic sophist. I'll be right back.
Everyone's going to have to chip in. That's only fair. That's the principle I'll be fighting for during the next phase of this process. And in the coming months, I'll continue.
Let's stop right here. See, the reason he's a sophist is because he's big on rhetoric and very poor on substance. Who does he mean by the rich, number one? Does he mean those on Wall Street who run the hedge funds, who have made billions and billions of dollars, those who crashed the economy in order to usher him into power? I mean, why doesn't he reintroduce the Glass-Steagall Act? Why doesn't he reintroduce the uptick rule? I wrote about this in Trickle Up Poverty. If you want to educate yourself and not be an ignorant dolt, pick up a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. It actually is out in paperback, I believe, and see what the Glass-Steagall Act is and see what the uptick rule is. Those two things alone could add billions and billions of dollars a year to the economy. But he's not doing that. So I question, what does he mean by the rich will have to pay a little bit more? Does he mean George Soros will have to pay a little bit more? Does he mean the hedge fund operators will have to pay a little bit more? Does he mean GE will have to pay their fair share of taxes? What exactly does he mean by the rich? We don't know who that means. I suspect he really means the two-teacher household I have been talking about. But you wait and see when they find out that they're going to pay more. You wait and see what happens to all the Democrats right now who are two teachers in Manhattan, for example, who make $250,000 a year between them in total with their pensions. Wait until you see what happens when they're paying a little bit more. Wait until you see what happens. When that happens, you're going to see suddenly a defection. Florida, Rose, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, you're the best debater we have in the whole world, and we need you to be on the presidential debates every time there's a presidential election to get the point across of what we believe in America. And you're the
Rose, all he has to do is talk about the non-tax payment by General Electric. All a Republican would have to do is talk about the cost of limousines under Obama and how many more he added. You take three, four, five facts like that, the amount of money Michelle Obama has spent on her trips and her entourage, that's the end of Obama, but the Republicans won't do it. I know this because they don't want to do it. It's not that they're incapable of it. They want him to win again. That's the absolute ugly truth.
It can't happen.
It will happen, Rose. Rose, and when it does happen, well, I don't want to get ahead of myself, okay? I don't want to get ahead of myself. I don't want to go so far ahead that I'm ahead of myself. WOR New York, fire away, Brian. You're on the air.
Hello, Dr. Savage. You know, I agree with most of what you say, and I agree with most of what the Tea Party people say, but this kind of segues into what you were talking about. Why should some money changer that really is not adding anything to society not have to pay more taxes?
I agree with you. I've just said there are two ways to control the billionaires on Wall Street who wrecked the economy to begin with and have not been controlled ever since Obama came to office. Obama said he would control them. He hasn't done it. All he has to do is reintroduce Glass-Steagall and the uptick rule, and suddenly these vultures are controlled. But why hasn't he done it? Because he goes to them for funding for reelection. On one day, 3 weeks ago, he meets with them for dinner and raises $40 million in New York or whatever. And the next day, he's out attacking the rich. Who do you think he's talking about?
Well,
not them. He's not talking about them. He's talking about the two school teacher household that I've been warning you about. Don't you get it? Las Vegas. Rita, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I got a couple points. I think what's going to happen, the unemployment benefits are going to go up. And so people who are on unemployment will vote for him.
Yeah.
The amnesty dream for the Latino population is going to be
passed.
And they
yes, get a vote. Yes, 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 yes. You can see the playbook. Axelrod, and he figured it out. Remember, everything he's passed has been after a terrible American fight, but he's won. He passed Obamacare illegally in the middle of the night, in the dark of the night. He jammed it down your throats. He just passed this incredible debt debacle. Again, by forcing people against their will, fighting the American taxpayer, fighting the American producer, fighting the American middle class. But he did it, didn't he? He is going to grant amnesty to the illegal alien as sure as I'm sitting here within the next year. They're all going to vote Democrat, and you're going to have a dictatorship in this country. And if you want to see a nightmare, you'll see the nightmare when those millions and millions and millions of illegal aliens all vote Democrat. You will never have another free day in your life. It will be more and more like Mexico. The very country they fled from will be the country you're living in. It will not just be their cuisine. It will be the heads hanging from lampposts. It will be bodies dismembered and hanging from highway overpasses, as I'm sitting here, unless the United States of America stands up to the tyranny of Barack Hussein Obama. And it's a tyranny. Make no mistake about it. He is a tyrant. His entire administration are sneaks who work in the dark of night. They have nothing but contempt for the tax-paying voter. They know they can do anything they want to you because they've proven they've gotten away with it and nothing has happened, and they're going to do it over and over again until they have what they've always dreamed of, and that is absolute power. They don't have absolute power yet, but they will soon have it, and they will do it at the ballot box simply by rigging the casino. And remember, there's not a casino in the land that loses money. Take a guess who runs the casino in Washington, D.C. It's not the Tea Party. The casino in Washington, D.C. is not run by the Tea Party. The casino in Washington, D.C. is run by the people who put Obama in power. And they haven't even begun yet. I warned you last time with Bush that in the last 3 months you would see excesses you could never believe. Was I wrong? No, I was right. You've seen nothing yet. And that's all I want to say tonight. This is going to go down, I think, in American history as perhaps the worst month in modern American history. What these gangs just did to us is something beyond comprehension, but it's only the beginning. It's a very dark thought, I admit. I'm not going to leave you on an upbeat thought. It's a very, very dismal time we live in. And if you are perplexed, understand you are not alone, because we have lost fundamentally our democracy.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Today we're talking about the criminals in the Democrat Party and the Quislings in the Republican Party who screwed America by jacking up the national debt to unsupportable levels. And now Obama said, good, now that I have this, I'm going to raise taxes. It's shocking to watch this. I seem to be the only one who has said America has been hoodwinked. In fact, if you go to michaelsavage.com, the WorldNet Daily group, good people, took a portion of yesterday's show and says, Savage said America has been hoodwinked. He warns of Leninist Obama's doomed path and offers a better idea. As the U.S. Congress came to an agreement on a budget that purportedly would avoid the nation's first ever default, talk radio host Michael Savage warned his audience not to listen to voices on the left declaring any victory for the Tea Party. Quote, if the left is telling you it's a victory for the Tea Party, then you know it's a lie, close quote, he said to his Savage Nation listeners. He said today's politicians need to learn lessons from history to understand what Obama is doing, asserting that the term Leninist better describes the president and his policies than Marxist. Savage said Lenin thought that a nation could only grow more prosperous when a nation is controlled by a vanguard and elite, a people who know better than you what to do with your property. The Leninist elite would lead people to a world free of pain and poverty. There would be no more haves and have-nots or private property, just boundless prosperity. All a nation had to do was transfer its entire wealth to Lenin's vanguard, the government. Savage noted that the Leninist vision had consequences aside from the well-documented horrors of Soviet tyranny. Savage said America's rich will be poorer. America's poor will be poorer. America's middle class will be eliminated. But America's government will be more powerful than ever, as will the elected officials and their corrupt bureaucrats. Obama can't take wealth from the rich at gunpoint, as Lenin did in Russia, Savage said. So he has to use taxation and regulation. And then he went on to give us some data in the article. Savage offered a better idea. Let's not raise taxes for the producers. Let's cut their taxes, said Savage. Let's let the producers keep their money and invest it in their ideas. If the idea works, they will create jobs and empower individuals. If the idea fails, then it is back to the drawing board without a government check. The advantage of this approach, said Savage, is that it rewards the producers without empowering the bureaucrats, and as the producers grow wealthy, so does the nation. Okay, you can read it all on michaelsavage.com. We have compromised our way into disaster. About 74% of the Tea Party patriots in the U.S. want Republican Speaker of the House John Boehner to go. Now Obama vows to raise taxes. Deal adds $7 trillion to the debt. Read the liar vows to raise taxes now that he got what he wants. All of this is on michaelsavage.com. Budget experts see deal as a spit in the ocean. Far left Obama base screams, we've been thrown under the bus. What, no new taxes? Play the clip.
Everyone's going to have to chip in. That's only fair. That's the principle I'll be fighting for during the next phase of this process. And in the coming months. I'll continue also to fight for what the American people care most about. New jobs, higher wages, and faster economic growth.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199. 800-255-4199 or go to AmericaIsRising.com. 800-255-4199. AmericaIsRising.com. Rep. Ron Paul wrote, when a cut is not a cut. Joe Biden, shame on you, Joe Biden, calling Tea Parties the terrorists. They're the government. Of the people, by the people, and for the people. You're a fool, Biden. You should resign for that remark. The Tea Parties are the people, by the people, and for the people. The bill enacted the largest debt limit increase in history. And what did I tell you about Egypt? I'm always right. I told you the Islamists would take over the government, and they are. They're vowing religious rule in Egypt. Thank you, Jimmy Carter. Thank you, Barack Obama. Thank you, Hillary Clinton. You're training suicide bombers in the Arab Spring, huh? HHS announces free birth control for women. Why don't they start with the government? Alan West explains why he voted for the Boehner plan. Here's what socialism yields in San Francisco. Subsidized soul food and subsidized jazz, as well as subsidized apartments. An anti-war group raised money for the Muslim Fort Hood plotter. Did you know that? The organization branded him a Muslim peacemaker. Did you know about that? It's all on michaelsavage.com. The organization featured him as a Muslim peacemaker. This is the man who plotted to blow up Fort Hood. And what was the group? Iraq veterans against the war and courage to resist. Okay? Now, who are these people? Why don't you look into their funding? See if they're really veterans or see if they're a communist front group. Also on michaelsavage.com, Savage Audio, beware the government media complex. ACLU to sue Miami Beach over gay tourist claims. And finally, on the bottom left, Savage to make his fiction debut with Abuse of Power, a thriller sure to score a bullseye with its target audience. I recommend you go to Amazon.com and order your copy now. The latest news will be covered here on the Savage Nation throughout this show. But the fact of the matter is the Dow is down 265 points after Obama's great victory, and gold is through the roof. Did you know that the debt hike was signed in secret? Did you know that Obama is hiding? Did you know that Italy is under fire in a widening euro debt crisis? Well, it's getting worse and worse and worse all over the world. It's certainly going to get worse here. This is certainly not the end of the beginning, nor is it the beginning of the end. It's something I can't even describe. All this and more on a system that is obviously not even working for the people. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Minnesota, Margaret, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
I feel most alive when I have a paintbrush in my hand. I've been painting Lake Superior because of the tumultuous nature of the lake itself, and I find a lot of solace in applying my energy towards something that could be long-lasting, could be an heirloom someday. If not, whatever. It's more about the process. I made 30 paintings.
Okay, but no, this is very important, but did you originally pick up a paintbrush because you're wrestling with this issue?
No, it's my nature. I wrote poetry as a child and doodled around. And when I was a young adult, I went skydiving and I wanted extreme adrenaline. And then I'm a grandma. So I've painted more recently as I've slowed down, as I mature. But I've been prone to painting, but I've more so in the last 5 years.
I understand. See, I myself have. You want to hear something funny? You look back on your life, you say, what did you want to do that you didn't do? The many times in my life I've tried to paint and I can't. There are things I've tried to do that I just can't do well, so I don't do them. I know that I don't have talent in that area. I could make horrendous paintings. I mean, I've gotten the brushes out and there were times in my life, but they're no good. I don't want to do anything that's not good. So that's interesting. So others would say, well, it doesn't matter whether it's good or bad, do it anyway. Well, take a look at the Brooklyn Museum. You'll see how that works out. Take a look at what's going on in the art the art departments and universities today, where they've encouraged kids who really have no talent whatsoever to believe that because they smear paint on a canvas that it's an art. Or take a look at what the Obamas just with their poetry at the White House. It was not poetry. Nothing is gibberish, but they think because they tell someone they just write what enters their mind that it's art. It's not art. It's dreck in plain English. Pauline in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I wish I had the hypersexuality problem. Basically, I would direct it right towards my husband.
You direct it towards your husband?
Yes.
But you're saying you don't have any other impulses, though, other than he?
No. We had a good relationship, and then menopause hit, and it destroyed me.
And so what about him? No, that's an interesting... It's nothing to joke about. I mean, you could turn it into a joke and ha-ha, but the man has the outlet through sexual enhancement drugs like Viagra. Is that what happened?
No, he's okay. I'm the one with the problem, and we never had a problem until menopause hit me. And just for the pharmaceutical companies, they're always going after the guys like, okay, here's the blue pill. There's like a lot of gals out here that are waiting for the pink pill.
But maybe you don't need it. Did you ever think that this is nature's way of giving you a rest finally from that frenzy? Isn't that a beautiful thing to feel? Not to be driven like that?
I don't want that. I want to be back with my husband the way I used to.
I see. Okay, well, that's another story. A lot of people would say, thank God they don't feel it anymore. Doesn't mean that they stopped living. Yet I know people very old who have never lost the urge. So what are you going to do about it? Jeremy, you've been holding on WTNT in Washington. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Tell us your story.
Yeah, just in response to channeling sexual energy, Savage, I'm 25 years old, and I take a lot of that energy, and I weightlift. I bodybuild. I'm not professional. I'm quite amateur, but, doing that.
Now this is very important, and again, not a joke, not meant to be a joke. Are you consciously sublimating sexual energy into the bodybuilding?
Not all the time, but yeah, sometimes I'm...
In other words, let's say you're going crazy, you're dying to be with a woman and you don't have a girl, whatever. What, do you run to the gym?
No. When I can, I go. I'm married. My wife and I have a 3-year-old daughter, so we can't always just jump in the bed, whenever.
Well, once you have a child, everything changes. Stepping on a plastic rattle in the middle of heat is that tends to change things. You got to take a lot of cold showers after the child's born.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing like stepping on a plastic rattle to destroy the mood. Isn't that true?
I'd still go. It wouldn't destroy it for me.
How about stepping on a wet diaper? Would that kill your odger?
If there was something on my foot, I'd probably just wipe it off.
Okay, let's stop right there. Come on. We're just getting... It's funny, though. It really is. I mean, the old jokes that nothing will stop a man. I mean, look at this guy, this Frenchman. Apparently, if he did what she says, he chased her down the hall. I mean, do you really believe a guy would do that to a maid? He sounds crazy. Do you actually believe he would chase her, throw her down, and force her like that? I find it implausible, incidentally. I think the whole thing was maybe something started and then she turned it into something else for a lawsuit. I think she's going to have a lot of trouble proving her allegations. He's ruined anyway. His professional life is over, but I think she's going to have a lot of trouble proving what she says happened. Charlie in Las Vegas, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, let's simplify this. All self-empowerment aside, all elitist stuff aside, marriage is biblically based. Sex is biblically based. It's made for joy and marital unity in Jesus Christ. It's no rocket science. And most importantly, to see God glorified through this union, not out of any kind of self-righteousness, just enjoying free sex with your wife, with your spouse forever. It's a covenant. It's not contractual. And that's where sex should be channeled. Amen.
All right. You got it right. You got it right. You hit the nail on the head. Absolutely. If there were more people like you, the country would be healthier. New York City, WOR Dave, go ahead, please. Your opinion counts. You're on the Savage Nation.
Now that you mention it, as far as the TV people making love to the camera, now I figured out why I find TV distracting. Before that, I was wondering why.
That's a good separate joke. But no, I remember when I briefly had a 3-month television career, the director always said, look into the lens and make believe you're talking to someone you want to, whatever, you're making love to the camera. I never understood that. I could not consciously understand how you make love to a camera.
I find that my energy isn't directed towards a wife and three kids. Once you do that, it's pretty well set.
Amen. There you go. Another healthy man. There's two now out of the whole nation. We heard two healthy men go the show. So I got to tell you a story that has nothing to do with sex and no sublimation at all. So today I told you I had a guy I knew came on my boat last week and he made a mistake. He tied the docking line in a high wind against the rail instead of through one of the apertures that are made for the line. And then when we docked, he said, I think I damaged your boat. And unfortunately, it tore the stainless steel rail right out of the teak rail, okay? And it really broke my heart because I keep my boat like a model ship. I was really angry and pissed off. So on Monday, I find a welding shop. The guy turns out to be a fan I didn't know, and he does the job for me in a half an hour. Can you imagine? Werner's Welding. Great guy. Straightens the rail out. Today, Tom List of List Marine in Sausalito comes down. Because I told him there were like 14 screws, like seven of them were broken off and sticking out of the wood. I don't know if you know anything about woodworking. It's murderously hard to get broken screws out of wood. He did it. He had all the special tools to do it. He fixed that rail and put it back in within less than an hour. But he had a box of tools. And, you know, I watched a man who works on wood and restores wooden ships and has always owned wooden boats. And he's a member of a wooden boat society in Sausalito of old shipwrights who build wooden ships and restore wooden ships. It's an amazing thing to see craftsmen at work in a world that is so computer-driven. You know, I mean, I grew up using tools, but when I meet a man who uses tools for a living and knows how to use tools, I respect them. I know people, by the way, I respect who don't know how to drive a nail. They couldn't cut a piece of wood correctly. But I think there's something lost in a society when kids grow up and they don't know how to use tools. Now, here I am. You could call me an intellectual if you want to put it in those terms. I don't like the definition. PhD, master's degrees, books. But I was raised to learn how to cut a piece of wood and how to drive a nail, at the very least how to use a screwdriver. Why? Well, for one, my father did things with tools, and I took his tools, and I still have some of them, believe it or not. And number two, do you know that in high school, when I went to high school, I had to take shop? And it taught you how to fix things. What is wrong with a well-rounded person learning how to use tools? Nothing. And so much has been lost in our schools today. Such a waste of time. How much time is spent in schools today without a shop class? You're going to go to college? You're going to be a lawyer or a doctor? Why shouldn't you learn how to use a tool? I ask myself.
Savage.
Carolina Senator Jim DeMint is also known as Senator Tea Party. He was elected in 2004, and he's chairman of the Senate Steering Committee. Senator DeMint, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, thank you, Mike. It's great to be back with you.
Well, what are your thoughts on this so-called debt compromise?
Well, I wish I could be more positive, but unfortunately, our country is on a course towards bankruptcy to borrow another $10 or $15 trillion. This does not change that course. And despite the rhetoric, it does not cut spending from today's level, and it will actually add to our debt another $10 trillion or more over the next 10 years. The biggest problem here is we don't have 10 years, and we can't borrow another $10 trillion. We can't borrow another $5 trillion, and it's very likely sometime in the next few months or a few years, we will hit a very real debt limit where no one will lend us any more money. And when that happens, the things we feared about not raising our debt limit now, such as not being able to pay our bills, Social Security, and default on our loans, those things will be out of our control because we won't be able to come up with the money to actually pay them.
No doubt you're worried about the possible defense cuts as a result of this deal. I know I am.
I am worried about it, but I think the way this is set up is to force Republicans to vote for tax increases because it's going to be an either-or. Either we accept tax increases or we face up to 50% cuts in defense. So the way this thing is structured is it probably won't result in as big of defense spending or cuts as it looks like, although I think they will be in the main deal. If Republicans don't accept the deal from the debt committee or from this special committee, we will be faced with huge cuts in the defense. So Harry Reid just said on the floor that there will be tax increases in this. The president has said that. All the Democrats in the House, when they were told to vote for this, said you will get the tax increases you want from this debt committee.
Can you tell us what kind of pressure leadership put on you to vote for this bill?
Well, at this stage, they don't even talk to me anymore because I make it very clear early where I stand. And I encouraged our whole conference to get out early behind something that was positive, that solved the problem. We did that with cut, cap, and balance. We got a nation of groups and individuals supporting it. We passed it overwhelmingly in the House. Senator Reid tabled it, but we know nearly 70% of Americans immediately saw this idea of cutting spending, controlling it over 10 years, and creating that accountability of a balanced budget amendment made a lot of sense. But that's not what the Democrats want, and I'm afraid Republicans, some of our leadership, did not get behind it as actively as we would have hoped.
Would you rate for the listeners how the Republican leadership handled this debt crisis?
Well, that's hard to do because they were working with a president who would not put a plan on the table and was content just to give rhetoric all over the place. And as Boehner says, you can't really negotiate with Jell-O, and that's really what we were faced with. So I think we could have been much stronger if we would have come out for a positive solution much earlier than we did. I thought it was a mistake to get behind closed doors with the president's people instead of taking a message to the American people and getting them engaged. So I think that hurt us. If we had gotten Americans involved with the process earlier and had some extended debates on the House floor where we could control it, I think Americans would have known more of where we ended up. As it turned out, they were so frustrated by the time we got to today, they just wanted anything to pass so we'd stop talking about it. But unfortunately, once the details are unraveled, people will realize that we not only kicked the can down the road, we may have actually kicked it over the cliff, that this may have been our last kick at actually trying to solve the problem.
Do you have any comments on what Vice President Biden said about the Tea Party yesterday, that they're terrorists?
Well, I've already responded on the floor. It's despicable what they're trying to do to citizen activism all across the country. They speak of the Tea Party as if it's some small right-wing group that's controlling the Republicans. And you know there's no such thing as the Tea Party as such. It's really just thousands of groups of people across the country who are concerned about our debt, our spending, and this is a group of from libertarians to conservatives to liberals to, you know, it's a mix of Americans who are rightly concerned about their country. And when you've got over 70% of Americans who want to balance the budget, that's not a radical idea. It's not a small right-wing group. This is mainstream America. So they call me Senator Tea Party to try to diminish me. Obviously, I'm proud of it. And I'm proud of citizens who were took to the streets and spoke up. But for every person who calls themselves a Tea Party member, there are hundreds of Americans who feel the same way. And it's those people we're trying to give voice to here in Washington.
What can we, the people, do?
Oh, the people can still do a lot. I mean, I just put out a book, The Great American Awakening, to help people understand how much power they had to change Washington. We saw it over the last 2 years. What I'm asking people to do in the book is to stay awake and to recruit more people, and that 2012 may be our last chance to turn this thing around. The power to change Washington and save our country is in the hands of the American people. Only 29% of Americans who are over 18 voted in the last election. If we can get working, hardworking taxpayers to get involved in the political process, we can change things. We elected some great new Republicans, and those I helped elect, every one of them voted against this deal, and I'm proud to say if we can get 8 or 10 more and a Republican president with real courage, we can turn this country around. So our fate is not bankruptcy, but right now it is our choice, and that's a choice we have to change.
Senator Dimon, can you give us your overall thoughts on the GOP presidential field?
Well, I think the GOP field is still developing. I don't think we should suggest it's a weak field. I think the candidates are kind of shadow boxing with each other and on the issues. So I've told people I'm not going to endorse anyone early. I'm going to let this thing play out. I was watching to see what they did on this debt limit. They really did not step forward with a whole lot of courage on this one. We're looking for candidates who, like Chris Christie or Scott Walker, who are willing to take bold stands and do the right thing regardless of the political consequences. And hopefully one of the candidates that are in the race or a new candidate who gets in the race will step forward and show that kind of courage.
What about the Tea Party? Will they get behind whoever ends up winning the Republican primary, even if it's pink shirt Mitt Romney or another moderate pinko?
Well, that remains to be seen, and I think I know Mitt well, and I know that that he has those conservative principles. I know that most of the other candidates are talking about them, so I don't want to rule out any candidate at this point. But I do think if whoever our candidate is not willing to take a strong stand on those conservative principles, those ideas of limited government, less spending, less debt, individual responsibility, then I'm worried that a lot of the Tea Party and active citizens might be looking to a third party, which would be very damaging in this particular election. So I want to make sure our candidates, whether it be for the House or the Senate or the President, will take a clear stand on those principles that I think the overwhelming majority of Americans support. And I think that's what we see in these ideas like balancing the budget and cutting spending. I'm still optimistic, and I think we'll see the right candidate emerge before the end of the year.
Senator, do you have any special plans for 2012?
Well, I am committed through the Senate Conservatives Fund to continue to elect conservative senators to change the culture here. I'm also working with people in Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina, Florida, to put together a presidential forum in South Carolina on Labor Day, September 5th, to give these candidates an opportunity to express their views of the Constitution and how the principles of the Constitution can be used to develop policy. So I want to be very involved in the election, but I'm just encouraging people in those early states to keep their powder dry, not get committed, and let's try to get united as conservatives behind the best candidate.
Senator DeMint, thank you for joining us on the Savage Nation.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment.
Savage.
Republican leadership going along with the Tea Party is able to hostage take, to use the term we're both using here. They're able to use the hostage of the government crashing, the economy crashing, to get their war. How can the American people figure that next time around we're not going to be stuck again with Bush's tax policies? We elected President Obama, the American people, but we're stuck with Bush's economic policies because they keep hostage taking to keep Bush in power. President Bush is still dictating tax policy in this country because of the Tea Party.
Hey, if you think that's bad, how about identity theft? What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now, 1-800-LOCK-485, and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call now. I'm going to take a caller right now from Kansas. Mark, you're on the one and only Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it is a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I've been listening for a long time. I wanted to say I'm just amazed in this day and age, in 2011, with someone as learned as yourself, who just is one of the smartest people I listen to, can even believe in God today. I mean, it shocks me, actually. That
I like that. I like shocking you. Do you find it offensive that a man of intelligence would believe in God?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's absolutely never been any proof of it. And in fact, if you're, Catholic or someone who believes in the Bible, it was admittedly written by man. I mean, at least Muslims and other religions, try to act like it was, that their word was written by God. But I mean, even if you're, I was raised.
Okay, I've heard your discussion. I don't reject what you have to say, nor am I going to here to try to turn you into a religious person. But let me ask you something. Do you believe Albert Einstein was super intelligent?
Of course.
Okay. Are you aware that Albert Einstein was a great believer in God?
Yes, I am.
Okay. No. I don't know, because a lot of atheists are confused because of the college posters of Einstein with the hair and with the tongue out that they put on campuses in order to debase his image. He said the more he studied the perimeters of the universe, the more he came to believe there had to be a God.
Right. But I also believe that religion is something that can shape you throughout your entire life. Things that he had gone through had, for some reason, you know, he had questions that could not be answered. And so he turned to religion, much like yourself. You had said that, you know, you had discovered him when you had hit the bottom. I think that, you know, like some people out there, like, you know, I hate to bring up his name, but like Jesse Ventura, or even like George Carlin used to say about God, that really it's something that if you have this hole in what you think is life and you have no answers for that, you have to go to this, you know, invisible man that is supposedly up there watching everything we do and all the evil that...
No, I've heard the atheistic arguments, and it's all, you know, it's sort of hollow, the whole thing, because have you not had black moments in your life where there was nowhere to go? Who do you turn to? What do you turn to?
With religion, you're told that God only helps...
No, but I'm asking you as a believing atheist. You believe in the religion of atheism, which is believing in nothing and nothingness, but you actually believe in something which is nothingness when you think about it.
I more believe in people or something physical than something that...
But have you ever fallen down a ravine and broken your leg and been laying there with no one to rescue you? Who would you call?
There's no one to call. I mean, what good would calling God do? I mean, if someone hears you, you know, help you.
So you'd pick up your cell phone and you wouldn't dial G-O-D, you dial 911. I get it.
I mean, I don't think it's an argument. You know, I don't even want to say it's an argument. It's really just your belief system. You know,
that's right. You're not going to convince me not to believe in a supernatural being that controls the universe. But you got to understand this about me. I do not believe God is omnipotent. I believe God is omnipresent. You know, there's a big difference.
That he's everywhere at all times, but he doesn't know everything.
See, many years ago, I went through a whole soul searching where I was about to become a total atheist. And I'd ask myself, how could a little child suffer from leukemia like this? How could a little child have cancer and suffer so violently? Why is it that evil men seem to thrive and get away with murder and rape and killing hundreds of thousands of people, while the innocent children, sometimes you go to a back ward of cancer and you see suffering amongst children? I said, what kind of God is there in heaven with a thing like this? And I found a book on this. It was written by I believe it was a Reform rabbi, and he was more a philosopher, and he said that if he believed God was omnipotent but not omnipresent, he would cease believing because he would not accept the God that was so cruel.
I guess I got to apologize. And when you say omnipresent, you mean that he's everywhere at all times, or what? I mean, what's the difference between...
I believe that God's work is apparent everywhere. If I'm sitting in my radio studio looking out of the window and I see a bush, and I see an airplane, and I see the breeze, and I see a bird, okay? These are all manifestations of God to me.
Okay.
To me. It doesn't mean I see a spiritual being walking around who's going to wind up in my living room. I'm not Jimmy Carter. I don't believe he's going to show up in a white robe in my living room and I have to drink strychnine in order to prove it.
That's all the proof you need that there is a God, is because there are these things that are present that you see every day.
Yes. In other words, how could this ever happen by accident?
I think that there's many, many things, and I think you'd agree with this, there's many, many things in the world that cannot be explained by us. I think that man is, you know, pretty low on the...
But you just touched again on something you struggle with all your life, and I agree with you. There are many things we can't understand. So what do you do at that moment when you reach a point you can't understand? What do you turn to? I don't understand it, and that's enough for you?
Well, no, I try to study as much as I can of things that have actually happened and people that have lived in the world and experienced what is to experience in the world and maybe what they're... I kind of see it as a study that you spend your whole life trying to...
Look, we're not going to change each other's mind. A belief is a faith. That's all there is. It's a faith, and period. You can't prove it. It's a faith. That's why it's called faith-based.
in this horrible, disgusting world with what goes on every day, how can you have faith in this being? Even if there is a God, say that there is a God. If there is a God, how could he be such an incredibly cruel being to allow what happen in the world? You know how there was...
I have asked the same question. I've gone right there. I'm not different than Mother Teresa, who doubted God's existence at times in her life, but still trekked along on the path of God. Because there's no alternative. I cannot take myself off this path at this point in my life. It's impossible.
You know the story of Noah's Ark, obviously. Flood, you know, because everything was so evil in the world that he needed to wash it clean, basically, and start over. You can't tell me that after all these thousands of years after that things are not 10,000 times worse than they were back then. And
yeah, but who says there's not going to be another flood?
There could be, but it's been so long. I mean, there's just no...
Yeah, it's been a long time. That's why I have survival food on a hillside house somewhere.
I'm with you. I mean, I do think it's probably coming, but I think we're more likely to destroy ourselves before that actually happens. But I just...
Yeah, that's a whole separate discussion. I want to ask you something. You've got my curiosity. Were you raised in any religion?
I was raised as a Catholic. I went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school. I was confirmed in the Catholic religion, although at confirmation I was right towards the time of not, you know, of really falling out of belief. But
what made you a lapsed Catholic? Something happened in your life? What happened?
You know, I was the weird kid that was like 9 or 10 years old in Catholic. You know, if you're in Catholic schooling, you go to church probably 2 or 3 times a week. And so I would sit in church, and the priest would want us to be involved, so he would ask us questions, and I would be the weird kid that stood up and said, okay, look, you know, if there is a God, then, you know, why does these bad things happen, blah, 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 and they never had
yes.
an answer for me. And
all right, no, hey, that happens in every religion. Every religion has kids who ask these questions. You're not the weird one. You're the smart one. You're the one who challenges authority. I understand that, but I've been that way all my life.
Right. I felt weird because there was no other child. And in fact, I was laughed at for even.
See, here's the thing about it. Do you do things in your life that you're ashamed of? Things that you really wish you didn't do?
Of course.
Okay. So who do you apologize to for that?
There is nobody to apologize to.
Don't you do any mea culpa saying, God, I'm sorry, I've sinned. I can't help myself.
No.
Well, what do you say to yourself? What do you say to yourself at that point?
You know what? I don't. I don't have those kind of internal monologues. I basically try to live my life. You know, I feel that the Ten Commandments are a great way to live. I think that, you know, all of the things that they list are things that you should probably try to do.
Did you say the Six Commandments? You're sounding like Anthony Weiner now.
No, I said the Ten Commandments.
I'm joking. Come on. Because most Democrats believe in Four Commandments.
If you listen to George Carlin, it should really be like two, because a lot of...
No, but most Democrats believe in Four Commandments.
Savage.